by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio.
Good evening, this is Roadkill Radio, and with me as a guest tonight is Carrie Simpson, and I'm Ron Gray. Carrie, I want to talk to you about the courts in Canada and some trends in jurisprudence that I know you have found alarming, some other people have found alarming. There have been a lot of references made. In fact, there's a book been published recently about judicial activism, the activist court. So I would like you to start us off on that understanding by lead us down the road of how we began to get into the activist court. Let me preface this by saying, back in 1959, when I was a young reporter reporting the Supreme Court of Canada, the Supreme Court of British Columbia for the Vancouver Sun.
Well, you realize I'm going to stop right there because then I can blame it all on you because I wasn't even on this earth at that point in time.
I know,
this is all your fault, Ron Gray.
Well, in those days, it was the commonly accepted thing, certainly respected by journalists, that we never criticized the judiciary because they never spoke in public. Anything they had to say, they said from the bench, and their impartiality was a key ingredient of justice in Canada. Now we have things like the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court going to speak in New Zealand to a collection of judges from around the world and urging them to be more activist in their interpretation, regardless of what the law or the Constitution might say. So we have come a long way.
Well, and just on that whole note, Ron Gray, before we get into the court cases that have led and sort of paved this current path that we're on, more than our Supreme Court of Canada Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin, you know, talking about the world and the need for this and how they have to be activist and, you know, create law and all the rest of it, we also have our judges attending conferences where they meet with the media and learn how they can be more presentable in the media. Mm. We have gay activist judges now with gay organizations. You know, what is happening as far as the politicking of judges should be concerning to every Canadian.
Well, and we actually have judges in their decisions making reference to public opinion as a standard for rather than referring to the law. But okay.
Well, and even on that front, I will a little bit later give a quote, but actually one of the professors, a professor out of the University of Calgary, actually calls this whole new court scene the court party.
The court party, as a
political party.
That was Ted Morton, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. How do we get on this road to activist judges changing the law from the bench?
Well, actually, Trudeau had a lot to do with it because, of course, the Charter of Rights kind of opened up a whole new era. It gave us an opportunity to, you know, look at how we do life in Canada very differently. It gave us an opportunity to say we have rights and we want to establish those rights. But it opened up a whole new industry to the courts as well, because the courts suddenly got to take this new document and apply the law, or in some cases, read into the law, or as we see now, modify and create new law.
You know, I recall reading that James Madison once called the judiciary the most dangerous branch. The idea of the government being broken into three co-equal parts. The legislature makes the law, the administration administers the law, and the judiciary settles disputes according to the law. That was the idea.
Supposedly.
But
yeah.
Because they have, and the charter amplified the right of judges to interpret the law according to their opinion.
And their politics. And their ignorance.
And
I will prove that point.
And they have become highly political. There's also, you know, the Charter of Rights is regarded in Canada as being something sacrosanct. It's like but there's a real hole in the Charter of Rights, and it's Section 1, which says, except as is permissible in a free and democratic, justifiable in a free and democratic society. And any of our rights that are listed thereafter can be thrown in that hole, and we're out of luck.
Well, and it's up for the court to define what those, and of course, that's been the problem on so many of these decisions, not all the decisions we're going to talk about today. That's a whole nother show, but certainly that is part of the problem. There is another big problem that we have here in Canada, Ron, and that's the lack of judicial accountability.
Ah, okay.
Huge issue.
Okay. So just to stay with the charter for a moment, I remember hearing Bill Whittle say, we were talking about him earlier, says that the Constitution doesn't give you any rights. You have those rights inherent when you're born on this earth. What the Constitution, the Charter, is supposed to do is to tell the government it cannot take those rights away from you.
Well,
it's supposed to be our protection.
It's supposed to be a tool of protection for the people, and yet it's being used against us now on so many fronts.
The Charter is embedded in Canada's Constitution, so it's part of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. So if the judges from the bench say this should be read into the Charter, they are amending the Constitution in an unconstitutional way.
Well, and we saw that with one of the early cases in this, and that would be in 1998, I think it came down, the Vreen case.
The Vreen case. That was in Alberta.
That was in Alberta.
Okay, to recap, that was an instructor at a Christian college.
Yep.
Who, after being hired and working there for a little while, announced that he was a homosexual.
Well, and was involved in activities that were not conducive with the image that the college was trying to project to the community.
And not coherent with the community standards of the university for faculty, staff, and students. So they offered him counseling. He rejected it. Then they terminated his contract. He wanted to sue the university, but he couldn't because it wasn't in the Alberta Individual Rights Act. So he filed his complaint against the government of Alberta for not having included him in the Individual Rights Act. Where did Darren Vreen's case go from there?
Well, it went all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada, and this was one of the first glimpses that we were given into how the High Court of this land was going to start interpreting mm-hmm. its newfound power within this new, you know, Trudeau era mania, if you will. And what we saw in that case is that they actually decided to read into law special rights based on one's sexual orientation. Now, we both know, because we deal within so many of these issues, that when the charter was created, sexual orientation was not. Chrétien was very clear in a lot of what he said through the legislature. There's no clear definition about this. We opened the doors on a whole bunch of fronts, and we are seeing that more and more. And I think this is part of the reason why people are saying, okay, wait a minute, we have to start looking at what the court has done in the past and where we are leading to it. Because when you start looking at cases like Vreen, and then start taking into consideration the issues around the redefinition of marriage, for instance, and now we have before the courts here in British Columbia, you know, the issues around polygamy. Like, where does this end? Where is the court's ability to keep interpreting community standards and all those other things that people are upset about? And you know, you started off the show by saying, you know, there's been books. There have been way more than books written. I mean, yeah, we've had Philip Slayton on here with Mighty Judgment. But when you look at what's happening in the legal sites, you know, there's a lot of discussion on whether or not the courts are truly doing something that is legal here. There is a lot of upset. There is a lot of concern. But Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin seems to be on her high horse to hell, you know, riding fast and hard, you know, and ignoring what Canadians are saying. And I think by the end of this discussion and in the discussions that will come down as we continue this series, Ron, you know, people are saying, let's put a bridle on that horse. Let's stop the horse. Let's go back to what we know is the proper role of the courts within our civil society.
Rein them into what the Constitution provides.
And, well, and what is legal. You know, there are definite boundaries here, and they're overstepping those boundaries. And I have seen firsthand, and that's why I'm doing this series, because I think the case that I was personally involved with illustrates very clearly, you know, it's not a complicated legal case. This clearly demonstrates that the court is operating in an illegal fashion. When you start modifying the law, changing the law, and not allowing a case to be heard under that new modified law, we have some problems, people. These other cases bolster those problems, all in various different areas, but nonetheless, they add up to something very dangerous for Canadians, very dangerous for our civil society, because the rule of law is something that we as Canadians count on to keep our society civil, to keep a sense of what's right, what's wrong, what's acceptable, what's not, what's lawful, what's illegal. And if you're changing and blurring those lines dependent on, you know, whose politics is sitting on that high court, we have a problem. And I think most people agree at this point who have looked at the role that the court is currently playing in this, you know, charter era. It's a dangerous situation that we have happening.
You mentioned Pierre Trudeau at the beginning, and I begin to see then that we know that he admired Plato's concept of the philosopher kings to run the society. It begins to emerge then that through the charter he actually made the Supreme Court justices into just that, philosopher kings.
Actually, you know, I'd never considered that, but I think that's a very good observation to what's happening. You know, the whims and whimsical thoughts and theories, you know, of those that view themselves as high and mighty and elites and that are going to take care of the rest of us, is certainly what we see transpiring in some of these decisions as
and
we go
every
along.
Subordinate judge under them is quite willing to take on a part of that mantle or to ride on its coattails.
Well, not all judges, actually, in reviewing some of the cases now, because of course the case that I was involved with, which was, you know, billed as a landmark case, there have been judges that have actually questioned what has gone on here and said, I have no idea why they wrote what they did. And they've put that in their decisions. We've had other judges stop trials and send it back to be heard under the new law. This will create chaos. My case has to be reheard one way or another. And what will happen to all those other decisions that have resulted from it, Ron? I don't know. That's not my problem. That's the justice minister's problem and the court's problem.
Well, once you have the philosopher kings and their philosopher princelings under them, they do become a kind of self-protecting club, don't they? They kind of close around each other.
But that's exactly what we have happening here. I mean, you have, you know, the brotherhood sort of judging itself.
The brotherhood.
Well, the legal brethren.
Okay, let me take you into the details of your case. Because it is an illustrative one, and it's an example, and it is going to be, I think, an important one to be reviewed. So let's bring our audience into that in detail. There was a radio broadcaster, very well-known broadcaster, who made some references to you on air, and not just once or twice, but a whole bunch of them.
Actually, Rafe Mayer, broadcasting from CKNW at the time, he was definitely the talk show host of the decade. He had a top rated, listeners galore. He was the it, if you will.
After Jack Webster died, he was the big guy.
He was, And he broadcast for many years off of CKNW. We had done many, many shows previous, to when Rafe Mayer went on his campaign of hate and vilification.
And that's not just your opinion of it. There was a judge, there was a court case, and a judge said, yes, he has defamed Mrs. Simpson.
Yeah. Now, unbeknownst to me at the time when we had our trial, though, Ron, there's a lot of things you find out afterwards. Rafe Mayer wrote an article just a few years ago, actually, in the Tyee about how he doesn't like Christians.
That's an online newspaper.
That's right, and how he doesn't want Christians in places of power and authority. And Rafe Mayer perceived me as definitely a threat. Now, for those of you who know me well, you'll know that I'm a Christian in need. I try to be good. It doesn't always work. And actually, I think we wrote an article that got posted thanks to some of my colleagues here at Roadkill Radio on, a few months ago when everybody was going to be.
We were all supposed to be raptured out of here.
That would be the one.
Yeah. And Carrie said to us, she said, well, I don't think I'm going to go.
Yeah. I emailed around the 10 top reasons why I wouldn't qualify. And you know, what was interesting is always in my public life, Ron, you know, logic prevails. You know, I mean, this is, you don't have to come from, oh, well, God says so. You know, usually there's a good reason if God says so. And I've learned that the reasons are usually the best. And certainly that's why he got my attention. I wasn't raised in a Christian home. I wasn't raised in, you know, that this is how you do things in Sunday school and all the rest of it. You know, so I come from sort of the back door end where, you know, that sort of all makes sense. When you look around this world and you see, you know, what happens, you know, there's a good reason for it. So the positions I've always taken in my public life have been ones that are based on fact and reason and quite logical and I always believe quite reasonable. But you would never know that from the lies that Rafe Mayer told.
Well, now I remember that period. I didn't know you then, but I listened to Rafe Mayer on the radio, and I remember when you were Rafe Mayer's sweetheart, when you formed the Citizens Research Institute, mm-hmm. and you were defending families that were having children apprehended wrongly and so forth. He was really happy to have you on the program.
Oh, his audience went way up. Yeah. They were top rated shows. He was nominated for awards. He didn't have to do much work because Carrie was pretty equipped and, you know, had it all done for them. And, but to Rafe's credit too, Ron, he stuck his neck out on these. These were not, topics that you found on other talk shows. Usually the media is very scared to do any of these things. And Rafe and Maren and the work we did together was a good team effort.
And that's why the ratings went up.
Oh, the ratings went up, but we also did a lot of really good work, Ron. We were able to change some of the laws, and I give credit to Rafe Mayer and CKNW for doing that. And Rafe really took a stand. When he believed in something, he took a stand on it, right?
But then I recall, and I think it seemed to me as part of the audience, that he discovered you were a Christian and he dropped you like a hot rock.
Well, no, what actually happened is the Citizens Research Institute in 1997 was very concerned about the growing epidemic of gay propaganda within the public education system. And we had been approached by teachers.
This is not something new.
No. And, you know, I was actually thinking, had the lies and deceptions not been told, I wonder whether or not these kids these days would have been subjected to the out in schools, you know? And I think Rafe Mayer and CKNW deserve some criticism for not bringing people the information. Matter of fact, CKNW, as our Roadkill fans will know, has basically vilified the parents. And now I'm wondering whether or not they're actually getting it. I think they might be. But going back there in 1997, the teachers approached us and said, Carrie, you know, and, you know, I can remember to this day thinking, oh, Carrie, you don't want to get into this subject. You have to, and I use this term, penetrate all that dead wood thinking, you know, because there seems to be a group of people that are so indoctrinated with the nonsense. The minute you say, wait a minute, you're a homophobe, you're a bigot, you know, the gays are completely innocent, the sex activists don't want anything other than to everybody to get along, which is bullshit. You know, and that's putting it mildly, people. So
Rafe, have you ever thought of this? The accusations that they throw at you, homophobe, racist, whatever they...
Oh, I have the longest list.
None of those applications would be effective if they were true. You know, let's deal, for example, with a person who is a racist. Let's go to the extreme and say the Ku Klux Klan. If you were to go to the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan and say, you know, I think your policies toward black people are wrong, he would say, well, of course I don't like them. Like, look, they're all black. They're, and he'd start, your accusations against him would not have any effect on him. But if you go to someone who is not a racist and say, oh, that remark is racist, they say, oh, no, I don't want to be racist. And they back off. It becomes a weapon that can be used against the very people to whom it does not apply. If you were to go to Adolf Hitler and say, I've read your book, Mr. Hitler, I think you have some real animosity toward Jews. He would say, of course I don't like them. They're the scum of the earth and we're going to get, I mean, you know, your accusation against him would not, well, of being anti-Semitic, he wouldn't take it as an insult. He wouldn't back off from it.
Well, you know, what was interesting about Ralph Mayer through this time, because it was in March of 1997 that all this began. And we did one show on it, actually, and we explained what was coming down with the government. The government was going to promote through curricular changes. I took the government's information. I showed him the government's words. And everything was real hunky-dory.
And this was something that had been brought to you by teachers.
By teachers.
Who were concerned about the abuse of the classroom.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah. And in conjunction around this time, we'd also created the Declaration of Family Rights, because we knew that there were activist teachers. I already had a pretty good handle on it because we were getting reports from these other teachers about what teachers like James Chamberlain was doing within the Surrey School District specifically. So I had a pretty good details on what was happening there. We did the show in March of 1997. Ralph Mayer was aghast. During the break, I read to him what was being distributed to the kids, pamphlets called Great Sex Tonight. He was horrified. He ended that show. Carrie, as always, come back soon and see us. Da, 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 da. Well, then the gay lobby effort kicked in. Okay. We can't have somebody telling the truth about what was going on here. So behind the scenes, there was a lot of back and forth about the declaration. Ralph didn't know about what the teachers were involved in. He didn't bother to ask me, which was sad on his part. Instead, he went down a path of a campaign against me. Over the next two-year period, Ron, he published in excess of 40 editorials about me, horrific names, lies.
Ralph Mayer is a liar. He compared you to the Nazis.
Yeah.
To the Ku Klux Klan.
And he lied to his audience repeatedly. He kept using these words like, oh, she supported a parent for taking their child out of a gay teacher's classroom simply because the teacher was gay. That is an outright lie. If Ralph Mayer had any balls, he would have had me back on the show. As a matter of fact, they did invite me back in the show in May. And I said, would you come on with Tim Stevenson? Now, Tim Stevenson was a gay NDP MLA and very vocal. He created a whole bunch of problems when parents wanted to hold meetings. He tried to get the unions not to work at the Renaissance Hotel until I called him out on it and called him the lies that he was telling the people and demanded that the premier apologize to the organizers of those events. But Ralph Mayer did something that is very uncharacteristic and what most people wouldn't have expected him to do. I was organized to come in and debate Tim Stevenson in studio about this. Tim Stevenson told Ralph Mayer he couldn't debate me. It would be like sitting in the room with the white supremacists. Okay? And Ralph Mayer bought the lie and he bought the nonsense and he didn't organize the debate. Now, excuse me. You know, anybody who's an elected official should be able to sit in a room with protectors around them, if I'm this horrific person, and hold their position. But Ralph Mayer catered to that and didn't let. So he let Tim Stevenson go on air unchallenged. Rafe Mayer just started apologizing for how cruel he was to the gay kids when he was growing up, admitted to calling them a whole bunch of names and being a bully. Well, excuse me, I was never a bully to people. I was always the one that would protect people at the schools, and if people were unkind to people, then they also had to deal with me because they'd have a new friend real quick. Okay. Anyway.
As a result of these editorials that mm-hmm. Rafe Mayer broadcast, more than 40 of them.
In excess, yep.
And because there were defamatory lies in them,
yep.
You sued Rafe Mayer and
CKNW. CKNW. Yeah, they eventually they changed names. They were the Chorus Network, those kinds of things. Now, by the end of the court case, it was WIC. Now, I should also tell your audience that during this time, I also sent a lot of information to CKNW management saying, look, this is not my public position. You know, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, but they weren't interested in it. Nobody wanted to tangle with Rafe Mayer. Rafe Mayer had a bone in his mouth, and he was like a dog going after it. And nobody wanted to challenge their star. So these lies were allowed to hit the airwaves, hit the newspapers. Anywhere Rafe Mayer could put this out, he did, on his websites, everything. So I finally, he eventually did one editorial that just was so over the top. And I also have to say, by now, Ron, my children's lives were being threatened. We had to have special protection, at the schools and at my home, alarm systems, guard dogs brought in. It was a very serious situation that Rafe Mayer was generating. And, there were organizations within the Lower Mainland that were capitalizing on his lies. Now I should say, when we finally did get to court, and this is where the story, you know, kind of gets interesting. The trial judge, unbeknownst to me at the time, was embroiled in her personal life with a lawsuit that was revolving around her spouse, an individual by the name of Lubomir Prychaluk, and he had a number of other aliases. And he was being sued down in the States by Jewish businessmen. And he was being sued for defamation, telling lies, creating hatred and vilification, and all the things that were exact factors in our case. And I'm a Judeo-Christian, and Lubomir Prychaluk's spouse, Marvin Koningsberg, it's a she, was sitting on my case. At no time did she disclose to us or any of the parties that, in fact, that she may be compromised. Now, the Canadian Judicial Council's Code of Ethics clearly states that if your family member is involved in something like this, you disqualify yourself from the case. Okay, but that wasn't even the worst of it, okay? It got better because, and again, unbeknownst to me at this time, I found this out. This court case, our decision came down in 2004, but I didn't find out all the details in this until just like 2008, 2009. Further than just her spouse being sued, for one was in excess of $1 million, the other one was in excess of $250,000. The $250,000 lawsuit was won, and the lawyers from down south, this was down in California, came up to register the judgment in our courts.
Okay, yeah.
Now, our courts have what's called a Reciprocation Act, and so it's a very simple kind of rubber stamp kind of thing that should have happened. It should have been no problem. But just as Marvin Koningsberg got very concerned about this, and the Chief Justice of our BC Supreme Court, the late Donald Brenner, obviously was very concerned about this too. And unbeknownst to me that the decision was registered in our courts. Well, when that happened, Justice Marvin Koningsberg, my trial lawyer, decided to protect their assets and went to the land titles office.
Sorry, your trial lawyer or your trial judge?
The trial judge. Sorry, okay, the trial judge in my case, the person that's supposed to be upholding the law, applying the law, you know, protecting me with the law, went to the land titles office through her agent and transferred their joint asset home into her name only. Okay, because the decision was against her spouse, this Lubomir Prychaluk. Now, this was 2 months before she came down in the decision in my case that she's involved in what appears to be fraudulent conveyance. If you and I do this, sorry people, you cannot just, you know, when when judgments turn bad, can't go and, you know, illegally hide the assets. Yeah. So we don't know any of this, but I should tell your audience, Ron Gray, that, Rafe Mayer, not only being a talk show host and not only being a former politician and an elected MLA, is also a lawyer. These are his friends, people. And a lot of people warned me, saying, oh, Carrie, you can't, you know, you won't win, The evidence was just so overwhelming. It just, there just couldn't be. Now, there's another problem that's in my case as well, and that my first lawyer, Eric Rice, who later became Justice Eric Rice, was vice president of the Canadian Bar Association when I hired him, then became president of the Bar Association. So I'm getting good people to take this case on. He didn't follow the rules, Ron. And we didn't find that out. And of course, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know all these things. This is why you're paying these people hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this properly. They should know the law. They should know the rules, and they should be doing what they're supposed to be doing. As it turned out, first got a glimpse into this at the Court of Appeal. I later found out more in depth exactly what he should have done. But at the Court of Appeal, Justice Southern said, you know, who did these pleadings? Nobody followed the rules. So I'm going to come back to that, because as we progress through this thing, it is very interesting. Prior to the decision being made in my case, after we finished I think it was 5 or 6 days of hearings, Justice Marvin Konigsberg calls a settlement conference out of the blue. And we're thinking, well, this is strange. I mean, settlement conferences, you try to get, you know, to save taxpayers money, because again, you guys are paying a lot for this. You want, before, you know, let's sit down and look at what's going on here. But she calls it after we're finished with the witnesses. So we all pile in there. Everybody's a little bit confounded, at least my legal team was, you know, like, this is strange. And Justice Marvin Konigsberg comes in and she starts berating Rafe Mayer, and she starts talking on about all different things, that this is political, that I'm a Christian. Like, being a Christian wasn't even part of this thing, because my position was all very simple as it related to what was going on in the schools. Contrary to the lies that Rafe Mayer said, I supported the parents taking their child out of James Chamberlain's classroom because the teacher is a liar. The teacher was teaching other teachers how to circumvent Ministry of Education policy. This teacher was requiring little 5-year-olds to check their religious beliefs at the classroom door. This teacher is a buffoon. He's unprofessional, and he didn't deserve to be teaching little kids, especially 5- and 6-year-olds.
The Schools Act says that the schools should inculcate the highest moral standards. You can't do that with lies, can you?
Well, he was also lying on national television about what he was teaching in the classroom. And, you know, people, I would hope that you're sitting watching this video going, oh, my goodness, Carrie, you shouldn't say those things. Somebody's going to see you. No, they won't, because it's truth. And fortunately for me, I have James Chamberlain's sworn testimony. So when Rafe...
Admitting to lying on television.
Admitting to lying on television. So, and all those other things that I just listed off as well.
Okay.
So when Rafe Mayer would get on his public, you know, bully station there and tell you, his audience, that Kerry Simpson supported these parents taking their child out of the teacher's classroom simply because he was gay, is bullshit. That is an out-and-out fabrication. Rafe Mayer was lying to you. Rafe Mayer was defaming me. And he was not asserting those as comment, as the judge found. The judge said, oh, well, Rafe Mayer is just a talk show host. He was asserting those things as comment, because from a technical point of law, there's a big difference in the fair comment defense if something's asserted as a comment as opposed to a fact. The problem that the trial judge is going to have, and the Supreme Court of Canada is going to have as this case becomes more public, is that Rafe Mayer himself said, here are the facts, in one of his editorials. So either judges are really stupid or really corrupt, okay? And you're going to hear that a lot from me as we go through this. And they won't sue me either, because I can prove those statements as well. So And I know you started off about saying how we're not supposed to be mean and nasty to judges and all those things. Well, when you can't hold judges accountable and when you see that they have corrupted the law and defiled the judicial machinery, which is some of the case law that I'm going to be relying on, those words are probably pretty passive, comparatively speaking, to what they should be.
There's a reference in the criminal code to bringing the law into disrepute.
Well,
surely that applies to judges as well.
I would think so. Yeah. And maybe that's something I need to look at, Ron Gray. So we go to trial and we're at this settlement conference and Justice Konigsberg is berating Rafe Mayer and saying, you owe her an apology. Somehow all this Christian stuff gets in there. Then the judge starts saying, Carrie, you and I are very different. You're pro-life. I'm pro-choice. What does that have to do with this? This
utterly
is about
irrelevant.
This has to do with Rafe Mayer getting on air and in newspapers and lying about me. It's a very simple case. Carrie, and then she says this bizarre thing, Ron. She looks at me, she says, Ms. Simpson, you and Mr. Mayer are both very influential people in this province. You can help the courts here. Well, I don't want to help the courts. The courts are here to settle this dispute that for 2 years I've been trying to get settled, that I want it done now, and I just simply want the law applied. So, long story short here, several months pass. Of course, Justice Konigsberg, as I said earlier, was busy transferring assets and doing that kind of stuff. 2 months after she did that, she comes down with her decision, and she finds that Rafe Mayer did defame me. He did so maliciously. He promoted hatred and contempt against Carrie Simpson and her ilk.
Ilk?
I know. I just, every time I say that, I crack, okay?
I know. I'd be happy to be part of your ilk.
Yeah. But then she let him off the hook for a few reasons. He had an honest belief in what he said. Now, I should tell everybody, this is where the courts are. Rafe Mayer, to his credit, got on the stand and said, I don't really know what Carrie Simpson's positions is on this because I've never heard her speak. I don't know. Okay. So,
wow.
But for whatever reason, even though you've never heard somebody speak on something, you can conjure something up in your wildest imagination and have an honest belief in it. Okay. The judge also let him off the hook on the fair comment because his assertions about the gay teacher issue were comment instead of fact, even though Rafe Mayer himself said they're fact. Now, throughout this decision too, and this is going to be very problematic for the courts, and, you know, I really appreciate this media forum that we have here with Roadkill Radio because I think Canadians need to know either our judges are really stupid or they're corrupt. And those are the decisions you're going to have to make. Either way, they don't deserve to be on the bench. If those are the two options that we have through this case, they should be resigning right, left, and center. Oh, but they are. I'll get to that a little bit later.
Oh.
So Justice Konigsberg lets Rafe Mayer off the hook. She also states a bunch of facts that weren't true. For instance, did you not know that I was opposed to the Surrey book case? The Surrey books being in the Surrey school district. These were the three books about promoting same-sex couples. Supposedly, the court decided that I was involved in opposing those books. But, you know, the problem is for these judges, again, stupid, corrupt, you choose, is that my public record, which we have videotape of and audio people, clearly state my position, which was a very reasonable one. Put whatever you want to in the schools, just tell parents. As a matter of fact, I invited the schools, the books to be in the schools because, as you know, Ron, I am not a fan of the public education system, and I think that we should make it as obviously bad as possible so that parents don't put their kids in there. So either the judges are really stupid or really corrupt. Again, we're going to have to decide that as the facts unfold. But so far we have them getting the facts wrong, totally contrary to my public position. We have them saying that Rafe Mayer made comment when Rafe Mayer himself says they're facts. The list goes on. So
getting
she lets
the facts wrong and getting the law wrong.
Yeah.
That kind of does the whole case.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, and such is the case. So we appeal the decision. She lets Rafe Mayer win. We appeal the decision. The Court of Appeal looks at this and says, look, those facts cannot support what Rafe Mayer said. You know, there's no way anyone could have an honest belief built upon the true facts here. Kerry Simpson wins. And Justice Southern also goes into this lengthy discussion about the rules. Why didn't anybody follow the rules? Well, okay, by now I have another lawyer because my lawyer has become a judge, and I also fired him when it became very clear during discovery that he was way in. He didn't have a clue what this case was about. But he still drafted the pleadings. And in the rules of the court, you get one option, you know, to amend your statement of claim, which he did, but he didn't follow the rules. Because there's a certain way you have to draft the pleadings.
That well, Madam Justice Southern said, why didn't anyone follow the rules?
She says, libel law is a minefield. You know, you better know what you're doing here. Well, okay, I hired a lawyer that's supposedly qualified. If not, then he had a duty to tell me. So the Law Society has some implications here. Not only that, the second lawyer, Leanne Potter, also obviously didn't follow the rules. But more importantly, guess who else didn't follow the rules then? The trial judge. So my question is, do we have
Judge Koningsberg.
Marvin Koningsberg. Do we have really stupid judges? The law is so complex now that judges and lawyers don't know? Because Kerry Simpson, you know, followed the game plan here, people, okay? Or does it matter when you have a public media person who happens also to be a lawyer? Is this where this little lawyer brethren thing happens?
Ouch.
These are the questions that inquiring minds are going to want to know. So the Court of Appeal lets me win. No, just hands down. We motor on to the Supreme Court of Canada. Now, this is where what we started this show off is going to be interesting, Ron, because we've seen the activism of the courts, right?
Yeah.
We've saw that with the Vreen case. We saw it with the Chamberlain case. Now, ironically, in the Chamberlain versus the Surrey Book case, which happened before my court case.
Chamberlain versus the Surrey School Board.
Yes.
That's the book case.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this was very interesting, and this case upset a number of people as well, because they basically said, the duly elected Democratic school board doesn't know what it's doing. It's basing their decisions based on a religious belief, and we don't like it, so we're going to override them. And Mr. Chamberlain, being this wonderful teacher, can put the books into the schools, okay? Now, nowhere did anybody, you know, this is where I actually wish maybe I had been involved in the Surrey Book case, because then maybe the Supreme Court justices would have known what this teacher was really about and why our protection lies best with our elected officials that we know. Instead, what this decision opened the door for was professional autonomy, that teachers, activist teachers, politically driven like James Chamberlain, who will lie on national television to you about what he's teaching in the classroom, that will involve your children in very questionable activities within his classroom, who will teach other teachers how to circumvent Ministry of Education policy so you as parents don't know what's going on in your own little five-year-old's room. A teacher who believes he's an equal authority in determining your child's education needs. A teacher who has little five-year-olds check their religious beliefs. Now, Surrey is a very diverse, multicultural, multi-religious thing. Imagine the parents when they find out that their little five-year-olds are all being undermined as far as, no, in my classroom, you don't bring your religious teachings to this classroom. You know, but this is the teacher that the Supreme Court, Beverly Justice McLaughlin, decided to show judicial favoritism for and said, screw your elected school board. We are going to tell you how to do this. Okay. Which is what they did in the Chamberlain case. Now, Kerry Simpson comes along. And their favorite teacher of the year. And she says, oh, I'm going to encourage parents to take them out of the classroom. They, you know, what do you think? My reputation versus their reputation? I don't think so. They're not going to let me win here, Ron Gray. So they actually did a number of things that were very interesting in this case. And for all the legal people that will be watching this video, because I know you're all very curious, because I've heard from a lot of you over the years. I've seen what you've written about over the years. And I know the lies that still are out there. And I also know that there's a lot of what the hell went on in this case. Well, that's what this show is about, right? And that's what the show Drive for Justice is about, because we're going to take you inside this story and we're going to ask the Prime Minister and the Justice Minister to decide whether these judges are just stupid, ignorant, or corrupt. Those are only options that
we
have.
Those are bad choices.
And, you know, I would like to invite Chief Justice McLaughlin to consider resigning. Now, I should just go back here before I finish the story about what happened at the Supreme Court of Canada. I should say that resigning judges and things have just become sort of standard. I have just learned now when I sued my first lawyer a few months ago, I have just been notified that he has resigned from the bench here in British Columbia as of August 1st. I also tried to appear in front of Justice Brenner to get Marvin Konigsberg disqualified off a small matter that resulted, and that'll be in part two of this. And so here the rules require me to make an application to appear in front of him, and he comes in and I give him the evidence and he should have disqualified her. So I send in my application, but the next day he resigned. Now we have two Supreme Court justices that have also resigned. So I'm hoping that there's a trend here that Justice Beverly McLaughlin is wise enough to figure out. But time will tell. It's her decision. It's either going to be an act of parliament that will take her off the bench or, you know, her own honor for this system. Because I think when people start hearing this story and looking at the true facts of this case and see what really went on here, I don't think she will have the moral authority any longer to sit upon the high court in this country. It's just too blatant what has gone on here.
Kerry Simpson, you mentioned time will tell, and time is also our enemy here. It's about to run out. There was a quote that came out of one of those cases that actually became the title of this radio program.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it here before me. But tell me which case this was.
Well, of course, this was my case.
This was your case.
And there we were sitting up in the Supreme Court of Canada. I was in the gallery, and they started talking about Kerry Simpson as if she was roadkill.
And the judgment said, in part, an individual's reputation is not to be treated as regrettable but unavoidable roadkill on the highway of public controversy. And so
Roadkill Radio was born for this purpose, for this exact purpose. Now, what's interesting, though, is that there was another case up at the Supreme Court of Canada that took the judges to task, and they had a very different twist on what public discourse should be, Ron Gray, and it should be civil and respectful and tolerant. So I guess, you know, when the charter rights say
one standard for the boys in the club and another for the peons.
I'm understanding that that's their interpretation, but that leads us back to, are they stupid or are they just corrupt? When I look at the law of this land, it says everyone has these rights. Not just certain judges, not just certain people, not just certain politicians, come talk show hosts that happen to used to be lawyers. Everyone. That includes Kerry Simpson. This drive for justice, Ron Gray, is going to bring Canadians together. There is a lot of unrest out there as far as what is going on in the courts. And I'm not alone in having to see, you know, having been firsthand to see how convenient the application of law is or isn't. The end result in my case, Ron, was that the court modified the law. They changed the legal test on honest belief. And they screwed
in
up
midstream?
All. And didn't send my case back to be heard under the new law. My case has not been heard under the new law. That's what's allowed me to re-sue Rafe Mayer. But I want this matter dealt with. There is going to be an invitation put out to the Prime Minister and to the Justice Minister. This show will be part of that portfolio of information that's going to bring Canadians a measure of understanding. We will do more shows like this. I know we will, where we will take apart piece by piece what went on in my case and all the other little intricacies that will demonstrate to Canadians that what is going on in the law, in the courts of this land, is not lawful, it's not right, and it's certainly not just.
There's an important distinction to be made here, and you made reference to it a moment ago. The Charter says everyone. This taking apart of the malfeasance or misfeasance or both within our courts is not about Kerry Simpson. Mm-hmm. This is about everyone. This is a defense of the charter rights of every Canadian. And we will come back to this topic.
More than that, Ron, it's upholding the integrity of our court, which is the base for our civil society. And I'm going to broaden my interpretation of this to again borrow the language from one wonderful Judge Bullock down in the States. You know, when stuff like this happens in our courts and people like me will expose it, it defiles the judicial machinery itself, and the judges in this case are the defilers.
And the exposing of it is opening it to sunlight that will cleanse the defilement.
What is that wonderful saying? Media is the soul of justice. We got a lot of soul here, people.
So here we are, and I'm sorry to say that we are completely out of time now. Carrie, thanks for letting me interview you on this. It there's a lot of detail in here. There's other things we do have to pull apart some other time, and maybe get into dealing with what is it possible for government to do about cleaning up the mess. But the first thing is to reveal the mess to the light of day. This is a start. Thanks very much for coming here and telling us that. Folks, thank you for being with us. Stay tuned to Roadkill Radio. This will develop. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.